the case may be on this rotating globe. Tonight, I will be filling in for Richard C. Hoagland, who is not well. This is Kinthea. I am the producer for The Other Side of Midnight. And I'd like to give a special thanks to my two ace technical engineers, Chris Spell and Keith Morgan, who are supporting me during the night. Thank you very much, guys. So this is that magical time between dusk and dawn when we find ourselves in another state of consciousness, willing to consider revolutionary ideas that challenge our programmed realities and to expand our awareness to new possibilities. And definitely tonight is one of those shows that is bigger than life, literally, and you're going to find out why. Our guest this morning on The Other Side of Midnight is Roger Spurr of the Mud Fossil University from mudfossils.com. Roger Spurr is a citizen scientist from the semiconductor industry. Roger needed to confirm and investigate for himself all areas of academic dogma. He focused on molecules and electricity, how everything interacts and bonds, and how the most basic things work. It was soon clear that dogma did not work. In 2012, after some yard work, he noticed a rock formations that were anatomically perfect. He then began studying this rock formation and mineral deposits, and he realized that the geology that we were taught did not work at all. Roger discovered giant human soft tissue body parts and had them DNA certified and CAT scanned and anatomist verified. He named them mud fossils, all one word, because they were mostly preserved by continuously wet mud. Academia refuses to examine his unimpeachable proof or even to respond to his requests. As a result, he started Mud Fossil University on YouTube to expose the truth. Fellow researchers and students poured in with evidence from around the world. Together, they now study everything with broad research across multiple disciplines at Mud Fossil University, MFU. Roger is an independent researcher working with thousands to get the truth. He leads up a team at MFU where they share and discuss without prejudice, without gain of status or money. At MFU, they do not ignore material facts and are committed to finding the truth no matter how far-reaching. MFU welcomes other researchers and shares freely. Roger, welcome to The Other Side of Midnight.
Well, hello, Kinthea. Thank you so much. How are you?
You're welcome. I'm so excited to have you on the show. I was first turned on to your work by another colleague on the Enterprise Mission imaging team, Andrew Curry, and became captivated by what I found. So I would like to start off here, if you would just share how you first found your first mud fossil and the impact it had on you, and if you could speak up just a little louder, please. Thank you.
All right. Can you hear me all right now?
That's better. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, to address the issue of how it all started, my interests have always been I can't see something and not understand how it works. My whole life has been devoted to working on electronics, and I was a troubleshooter, and basically that's what I did in the electronics industry. And once you start to see how the molecules and the electrons and the bonding and everything works together, you notice things that most people don't really focus on. And, of course, I've always had a big interest in anatomy and biology and every bit of physics, every bit of science I enjoy. So having that basic knowledge, I was just working out in the yard one day and trying to pick up some rocks to build a wall. And I had a little construction work done in my yard, actually 15 years prior. And they had left a pile of debris from the hole and so forth out in the side part of my yard, in the woods, more or less. So I'm out there digging around and picking up rocks and trying to get enough rocks to make a little drainage ditch. And I started to notice a very, very strange patterns, and I all of a sudden realized that I had picked up one rock that was a fingertip. I said, whoa.
Did you know it was? I mean, did it look like a fingertip? What gave you a sense?
No question whatsoever what it was. It was about maybe 10 inches long and about maybe 4 inches wide. And it was the very tip of a thumb, actually was a left thumb. I mean, it's that specific. You could tell it was a left thumb, and the nail bed was still there. The nail was gone, but it was very clear where the nail bed was, and all of the different anatomical features. I know what to look for, and it was all there. The apical tuft, and where the in the blood and the fingers. In all of your body, you have the arterial supply, which is the red blood, and that flows down from the heart and the lungs after it gets oxygen, and it flows down through the body and delivers that oxygen as from the red blood, which is ferrous oxide O3 variety, has three oxygens. As it passes through the body, the oxygens are used. And you end up with, in the body, it's blue blood. The vein blood gets sucked back up to the heart to get more oxygen. It's blue. In the mud fossils, you have the red blood, which is the arterial blood, and then you have the vein blood turns black. So you're going to be looking for red and black, or the arterial side. Sometimes the blood will blow out because there's no restrictions on arterial supplies to the body. It just pumps. That's why if you cut yourself in an artery, it just goes bloop, 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 and it shoots all over the place. A vein is different. A vein has a valves in the veins so that the blood can only go one direction, which is up to the heart. It will not allow it to go backwards. That's why in the blood mud fossils, you find a lot of black blood. But you don't normally find a lot of red blood. The red blood usually purges out of the body. So at any rate,
Wait, Roger, before you go on, I'm like just sitting here on pins and needles. I mean, you find this thumb, this tip of a thumb that's 10 inches long. I mean, did you consider like what size was the being that had this thumb? Had you thought that there were such large beings? What kind of emotional impact did you feel?
I was like a standard human being. I didn't have any idea that anything like this could possibly exist.
So what was your reaction when you saw something that was like defying everything that you knew before?
Well, it was shock, obviously. It was like, you know, wow, how could this possibly be? And it took a few minutes to settle in, the whole hand was there. I found the hand was there, you know, the palm, you saw that, the palm,
yeah.
There. Mm-hmm. And then the knuckle, and then I found some fingers, and it just more and more stuff kept coming out.
And this was at your place? Is this, you're saying in your yard?
Yeah, it came out of my yard. I have some property. It's not like a little yard, uh-huh. But there's a lot of stone walls in the old New England areas.
In the New England area. That's where you are. That's where you found these mud fossils. Okay.
Right. Yeah. But they're all over the world. I mean, I have nothing special here whatsoever. Not a thing special. It is everywhere. Hmm. And when I found the finger, I just kept digging. I kept finding more and more and more and more. And I decided, how could these things turn into dirt and mud and rock when they were at one time flesh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, it was a very, that was where I had to start. You know, how did this happen? Because, you know, I mean, if it's there, it's there. But
so you have to. You were convinced when you first saw it that it was actually that, or did you do some other testing to convince yourself?
It didn't take long. If you have, I have an eye for everything. I have a little extra bit of vision, to be honest with you, to see these things, because that's what I did all my whole life, is to have to understand the process that I'm looking at. Well, how did this happen? So once I started to get into the chemistry of it, once I could see it. Let me put it that way. I see it. I knew what it was, but I was perplexed at, you know, this is just. Right at that point, I was stumped, and I'm thinking, how could this happen? There's no bones here, no bones. It's just actual, just like your finger. You cut your finger off, and you turned it into dirt, and you turned it into mud, or you turned it into rock. It was exactly flawless,
Wow.
So
amazing.
I'm thinking to myself, how did this happen? Well, then that led me on a journey like you wouldn't believe. But to start with Yale and Harvard and all these other do you want me to speak to that now? Because
I was just curious. You had mentioned this incident on your porch with your wife. Is that before or after Yale and Harvard?
Well, that was in the beginning. When I told you I woke up one morning, I just felt like there was something I had to go figure out.
And that red droplet. I want the audience to hear that story. It just blew me away when you.
About the what?
The red.
I got you now. All right, so here's what happens. So I'm out in my yard, and I at this point, I had set up a whole operation. I had all kinds of things going. I had stone cutters and grinders and I had everything going on out here because I just couldn't figure out what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm.
She's out sitting on the deck taking it easy, and I'm cutting stones and looking at them, washing them, and trying to figure out what I'm seeing. So I cut one open. I wash it up. I look at it, you know, and there's nothing special there. I put it down. I go and do some other stuff. I come back a little later, and I'm looking at the rocks I had cut and washed and everything because they change dramatically when you put water on them. So, you know, when they're dry, when you put the water on, they actually come back to life almost.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had all
they
these
look
things,
like
so,
they're polished, probably. Gives them a polish.
Yeah, they take on the colors of life again.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got them sitting there and they're sort of drying out. And I come back and I'm looking at them. I see this one has a little red spot in it. And I said, wow, it looks like a little ruby or something. So I grab it and I'm looking at it. I'm thinking, wow, this is fabulous. And I wash it up to look at it again. And then things gone. So I said, oh, no. I said, well, whatever it was, well, it fell off. So I come back a little later, same rock, got another red spot in it, the same spot. So that's when I realized there's blood coming out of it.
Oh, blood coming. How old is this blood? How old is this rock that blood is coming out of it, really?
Oh, they can be 100,000 million years old if there's that many years. And
how's that possible that the blood can stay moist that long?
Blood has a different property than anybody understands. Blood is the most enduring product on the face of the planet. And DNA will never, ever, ever go bad if it stays wet. And here's the process. The DNA is in the hemoglobin, which is in the blood, which is ferrous oxide. A lot of ferrous oxides.
Okay.
Now, ferrous oxide is a transition metal. Right, it's a metal. Now, metals have a characteristic called chelation. And the chelation is where a bunch of molecules will surround these transition metal complexes. All right, so it's a transition metal. That means it's an electronic thing where they can bond with one single electron. That's the beauty of the transition metals in your body. doctors don't even understand this. These transition metals that are in your body, and you have almost 100 of them, everybody's supposed to have every single one of them. If you don't have every one of them, you're going to be sick. And those transition metals run around through your body, and they can pick up and deliver things in your body with one single electron.
Amazing.
What that means is that when you eat something, and your body starts dealing with it and grinding it all up and breaking up these little tiny bitty pieces. And it has to do that with enzymes.
Mm-hmm.
Enzymes are there from bacteria. And once your enzymes break all these little bits and things up, then these metals carry them around your body. And that's the metals of the transition metals.
Okay, and, Roger, hold on just 1 second. I want to let our audience know that on your page, this is the Roger Spurs Giants in the Earth, the Incredible Possibilities of Mud Fossils. If you scroll all the way down, there is the list of the transition metals. It's number 13 on that page, transition metal ion colors. So take it away, Roger.
Yeah, those, and that follows the opalized heart there.
Mm-hmm.
But the key to the whole thing is that these metals are in your body, and they all have colors. Every one of them has a specific color. I have learned by putting water on these rocks and looking at the actual colors and how they present themselves, what type of a body part it is, and what type, if it's blood or if it's fascia or if it's the tendinous material or where the tendons anchor in the body, they all have a specific color.
Is that because different parts of the bodies each have its own composite makeup of those transition metals? And so you're looking at that combination, and then you're recognizing the same combination in the mud fossil? Is that what you're saying?
That is exactly correct. Mm-hmm. Every time things will change colors. So you won't always see the exact same colors mean the exact same things. It depends on how that particular body part ended up, the chemistry that it ended up being preserved in. Now, I'm going to just go to the Great Flood, because everybody's probably thinking, well, how the hell did all this happen? Because that's what got to me. I said, how could they have turned into rocks and there's no bones? What the hell is going on?
Mm-hmm.
So it took me several years to do this, to try to figure this out. And I actually made my own mud fossils once I realized what the process was. But it came down to, just pretty much investigating detective work of how this could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to try to decide in my mind, what am I going to eliminate and what am I going to put in here to make this thing actually end up being rocks? So, and why are they on the surface, on the top of the surface of the earth? These aren't buried deep anywhere. They are, but they're, a lot of them are just sitting right on the top of the surface of the earth. They're not something you even have to dig for.
Mm-hmm.
Every single rock, after about a month of doing this, I said to my wife, I said, every single rock I pick up, it was alive once. Every single rock. I'm not talking about 1, 2, 10, 1,000. I'm talking about every single rock on the ground was alive.
No, how is that possible?
That's what I said.
I don't understand.
That's what I said. So I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, this is just bizarre. But I knew what I was looking at. There was no question. So here's what I came to understand, was the only possible way this could happen was for the bones to be dissolved and transitioned into what's called source rock. The petroleum industry.
Source rock? Is that SOURCE? Source rock?
Yes, source rock. And if you look up in the petroleum industry, they understand it. And the source rock is the marrow and the blood and the bones and everything. It turns into hydrocarbons, which are the blood and the bitumens and the you know, the volatile gases and all that stuff. And they break down because of their extreme chemistry, the Ca2 plus and phosphates and phosphors and all this stuff. Very, very reactive in salt water, right? In salt water, they dissolve. They go away. But the flesh loves salt water. The flesh doesn't even know it's dead if it stays in salt water. Yeah, the flesh, you live in salt water. Your body is just a bag of salt water. It's just about 7.2 pH.
I see.
And that's what the oceans are.
Right? Okay, there, so hold on a second, Roger. Just a second. I want to let all of our audience know, if they go to theothersideofmidnight.com and they click on Roger Spurr's show, Giants in the Earth, The Incredible Possibilities of Mud Fossils. If you scroll down, number 3, you're going to see a link to human bones dissolve in salt water of the ocean, which is explaining how Roger's talking about how the bones are dissolving. And then in number 4, you're going to see a mud fossil lung that actually shows you blood in this rock, in this mud fossil, which is suspected to be over 4,300 years old. And we will be coming back to this, but I want you to know that, like in number 6, you're going to see a combination of chicken that Richard, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of my dear Richard Hoagland, may bless him, that Roger made his own mud fossil with chicken. And underneath, you're going to see the close-up of the mud fossil and how similar they are. So, okay, Roger, go ahead now that they can see what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a wonderful process once you understand it, because your body is made up of a tremendous array of minerals and molecules in fabulous organizations, and you have collagens and keratins and these fibrous matrixes in your body that is designed to do a specific job in a specific chemistry. So you have kidneys that have natron in them, which is natrium, which is sodium, which is extremely caustic. And that particular scaffolding is going to be built to work in extreme salinities. Then you're going to have your kidney, you know, you got your kidneys, you got your lungs, your lungs are filled with crystals. Now, they don't understand this until they turn solid, but inside your lungs.
What kind of crystals? When you say crystal, are they like salt crystal? What kind of crystals are you talking about?
They're different. Well, you're made up of all crystals anyway, but crystals, I'm talking about quartz crystals and all kinds of like crystalline structures that have chemistry
in our lungs.
Every time you breathe, you're transferring in, you're bringing in oxygen, you're expelling all kinds of carbonic acids, which means the carbons in your body attach to all these different volatile or gases and so forth, bring them up to your lungs, and then they're expelled virtually in the same process as like a catalytic converter does in a car. I'm not kidding you. In your body, in my mud fossils, I have lungs that have 20, 30, 40 different colors inside the lung. They, you know, you saw the heart, how that had all those different colors.
Okay, so Rick, Roger is referring to number 12 on his page. It's number 12. It's an opalized heart, and it shows on the left a human heart, and then on the right, Roger, take it away.
Okay. The one on the right is an opalized heart, and it is the structure of it is identical to a heart because it was a heart. Now, how did it turn opalized? How did it turn to be all those specific gorgeous looking colors? And they are in specific regions, like the ventricle walls are a certain color, the heart strings are a certain color, the fascia is a color, the aorta, the different transition metals in there, all kinds of different colors in there. that.
So the colors we're seeing are the transition metals. Is that what you're saying?
That is exactly correct. They're transition mm-hmm. metals that bond with the tissues. The tissues, so what it tells you is the tissues of all of these different exact specific regions in the heart itself. So the strings, the ventricle walls, the fascia, the muscle, the aorta, all that stuff has its own exact chemistry. That means it's going to look for a certain transition metal to stabilize, because that's what they do. They want to stabilize, and in order to become stable, it says, I want to bond with copper, or I want to bond with iron, or I want to bond with vanadium, or I want to bond with a series of different molecules that create a certain color. And if that color isn't right, it means that tissue is not healthy, right? Mm-hmm. I'm into the health issues of these things, because I can tell more from a health issues from my mud fossils than a doctor can when you go into his office. I can tell you more about a human body from my blood mud fossils than he can possibly ever tell you about your body.
Are you saying that you can use these transition metals to diagnose health?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I know this is a tangent, but if you're able to do that, then are you able to, like, if one recognized that they were short of a certain transition metal, or can we do something to supplement to get that right balance?
Absolutely. And this is what I've been fighting for, like crazy, with the medical people. I've been not fighting with them because they won't talk either. But here's the issue. Nobody knows what is normal. No, you have no idea what is normal. None at all. Mm-hmm. It's like going to a mechanic and saying, you know, I got a problem with a car. And he said, well, what's the matter? He said, well, it's not running good. He said, well, let's see if there's any dents in the fender. He said, well, how would that affect the way it runs? I said, don't you want to check the oil? Don't you want to check the battery? Don't you want to check the radiator fluid or anything? It's all, we don't check any of that stuff. We don't even know anything about that. That's what you do when you go to, there's no clue about your health at all. None whatsoever. And this really annoys me. But I'm going to tell you something here right now. We could fix the health system would fix itself. What's wrong right now is that nobody understands health. When you eat something out of the ground, you're supposed to eat close to the ground where you don't have a lot of preservatives and additives and all these special chemicals. You don't eat those and they don't just go away. You eat them and they have something inside of you that you're either going to have to get rid of them, or you're going to have to consume them and make them do something. So that's what happens. In, it's got to go out. How does it go out? You don't just poop everything out that you're not supposed to have in you. No. And it does things to either hurt you or help you, everything in your body. Now, here's the key. When you eat anything at all and you put it in your stomach acids break it down into little bitty pieces. Right? So you got to break all these molecules down. You got little tiny bits of molecules floating around, but they're acid. They turn into solid acids. So when they come out of your stomach, they go into the lumen of your small intestine, which changes the acidity down to normal again, so that it doesn't burn your stomach out. Mm-hmm. Once that stuff gets into your stomach, the bacteria of your stomach, and you're supposed to have a minimum of 1,000 different bacterial strains in your stomach, over 1,000.
And they, oh my goodness.
They attack the food that's coming in to crack it into little tiny bits and pieces.
How do we know if we have all the bacteria we need?
You don't.
I mean,
there's no tests. There's no test for this, and there's no test for what's in your blood. This is my key. This is why I'm saying that's all we need is those two tests, and we can fix health in America. In a matter of 6 months, half of the people in the United States won't be sick anymore. I'm telling you, it's a fact. Now, here's the key. When you eat this stuff and it gets into your intestines, if you can't deal with it correctly, you're going to be sick. Now, when I say deal with it, what do I mean by that? I mean
assimilated.
What's that?
Assimilated.
Simulated. No, what do you mean?
No, assimilate. Okay, go ahead, Roger.
Well, you got to absorb it correctly, and you have to break it down correctly and absorb it correctly. Then it has to be delivered. Then it has to be picked and destroyed and gotten rid of. So how do all those things happen? It gets into your intestines. The bacteria attack it and break it down. And they say, well, what do we have here? Well, the guy's eating a lot of meat, and he's eating this, and we got some copper over here we got to deal with. And this is exactly what happens. And I'm not kidding you. The bacteria figure out what they have to create, and they're called enzymes, to go down and break down the stuff that you just took into you, which is copper and aluminum and zinc and cobalt and everything there is. It's in the world you will end up putting in your body because the plants and animals eat it. You eat them, and it's all part of you now. So at this point, you got all of this stuff in you, and it's got to be dealt with correctly. The bacteria say, what is there? Then they say, okay, I'm going to create some enzymes. Now, the enzymes are the most beautiful thing that's ever been made on the face of the planet because the enzyme has a specific job to do, and when it's done, it dies, it goes away. If it is used, and it can be used over and over and over and over again until it becomes a point where it says, okay, I did my job, there's no more of this stuff to deal with, I'm going to go out of here. But then the bacteria has to make it again for the next time you in this stuff. So that's
is that daily? I mean, is that like by meal or?
Yeah, every minute of your day, it's dealing with whatever you bring in, it has to deal with.
Okay. So,
something in there has to say, I need a certain amount of this kind of metal and that kind of metal to be able to break these things down, carry these things around. Now, if you take antibiotics at one point in your life, or you don't have the healthy bacteria in your gut, these things will get in there and they'll say, well, where's the guy who's supposed to come over here and break me up and get me ready to go be delivered? He said, well, they killed him last month. The guy took some antibiotics. They're all dead. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, well, there's nothing you can do. You're just going to have to get pooped out of here and just get out of here, do what you can. And at the point, your skin says, well, I need that stuff to make me supple. I need that stuff that bacteria was supposed to create an enzyme for. And now it's not coming to me, so I'm going to be itchy, I'm going to be scratchy, you're going to be irritated all the time on my skin. It'll be a skin problem. Another bacteria may not be good, and you're going to have a problem with your eyes or your ears or your toenails or your hair.
So how do we replace those bacteria?
That's the probiotics.
Okay.
Whenever you hear them talk about probiotics and, yogurt and all that stuff. Excuse me. Those are the things that break down the stuff that you eat.
Okay.
Now, if you have the correct bacteria in your body, and it breaks down those products, and you're eating the correct products, and not filling your body with crap from fast food and from preservatives and all these different additives they're putting in things, And the other thing that's really, really bad is this Roundup is absolute disaster.
Oh, yeah.
There's a woman doing from MIT. I've been following her. It's a real problem. But anyway, here's my point. Where I'm getting to, the bottom line of health is that right now there is no test at all that you can go into your doctor. You should be able to go in and give them a blood sample and a fecal sample. And that he should be able to analyze what's in your blood. And there's 100 different metals that you have to have in your blood. And if you don't have them, you're sick. You're going to be chronically ill. I don't care what anybody says, you will be sick. Now, if you don't have those metals. Now, why don't you have the metals? Because you don't have the bacteria. All right? So if you don't have the bacteria, you're not going to get the metal. So if you go... And if you don't have the metal, you can't deliver and pick up the products in your body. Case closed. It's as simple as that. That is health. Now, we don't have a database for that. There's no database. No idea. You have no idea. You go in and you say, what's the matter with me? He says, well, I don't know. Take some of these and see what happens. And that's exactly what happens to you. Now, if you went into the doctor and you said, okay, I'm going to give you a little blood and a little a fecal sample, and then you're going to see what I have in there. And he might say, you know, you don't have any copper in your blood, or your iron is way off the scale. You got way too much. And then when you go into the bacteria, you are going to see a relationship in the bacteria. It's going to say you don't have any Gracilis Drusillus, and that means that your copper is going to be way out of whack. Now, between those two very benign, non-interventional tests, you can pinpoint what is wrong with a person. That's going to be, I'm telling you right now, that is going to be what go in there. That will be your chronic health issues.
That's amazing. So I'm really curious now. You're talking about these transition metals in relation to health, and you've been showing us with the opalized heart how they are, you can visibly see them. So now I'm wondering, in these mud fossils, and you're detecting these transition metals, are you able to diagnose the health of the creature that your mud fossil? Can you tell from the balance of the transition metals what the health of this creature was?
You wouldn't be able to do that, because these are being preserved in other conditions. There's certain salvomorphism, it's called, and the solvents come down through the soils and the rain and whatever, and they change the chemistry of the. So sometimes you're going to see a kidney that, or you'll see a heart that's green, actually. Sometimes you see them, they're red and they're black and they're all these different colors. And like the opal means that it was petrified and fossilized in raw blood. That's why their colors are there, because that's all the colors of blood.
Oh.
And opal come from Australia. Australia is like a scab. Australia is so covered with, it's like a freaking scab.
You're kidding.
Blood in Australia.
Why do you think Australia more than anywhere else has so much blood?
It was like a bloodbath. I'm telling you, it is just the most bizarre. Ayers Rock is a heart.
What?
That's right. Ayers Rock is a heart.
have you done tests? I mean, like,
all you do is look up, go on Google and put in Ayers Rock and Google it and look, and you can see I can tell where the heart strings are. I can tell where the cardiac muscle has eroded away. You can see all these cardiac muscle places in behind it. I can see the aortas, all of the tubing of, you know, if you just have to dig around and look. I can see all the colors of the blood. It's a heart.
But that's enormous. That's enormous. What kind of creature, what kind of being had such a huge heart?
Well, you know about the dragon.
Well, let's not go there yet. Let's not go there yet. Let's go back. I tell you what, let's go back to number one.
I'll tell you right now, the ones that I had DNA tested right here from my property, I had three DNA tests on. One of them was for a lung that was, you saw that lung. It's absolutely perfect. And it was.
And that in his items is, what is it down there? It's number 14. Actually, there are two lungs showing there.
Yeah, one of them was DNA tested, and that was the one on the right. The other one on the left just gushed blood everywhere. It leaked blood all over the counter when you clean them. the one that was DNA tested, that was a human heart, and that was about the same size as a normal human. I mean, a lung, but it's the same size as a normal human today. Now, the other two I had done was the fingertip that I talked about originally. That I figure is right around between 50 and 60 feet tall, that guy. Now, the big
one.
So
those would be those giants.
Pardon me?
Those would be those giants that we've heard about in mythology.
Oh, absolutely. There was more giants, and they were not puppies. Let me tell you something. There was the giants, you know, everybody thinks that they're crazy. But if you go and look and see the evidence that I have presented, you'll find out the Devil's Tower is the foot of a giant.
Okay, that's a real stretch. That's a real stretch. We'd have to put an image there. I didn't have time to put that image, but let's just plant that seed. We'll do another show on that one, because
I have all that stuff on my.
Oh yeah, let's mention to our audience that he has an amazing YouTube channel. Tell them about your YouTube channel.
All right, the YouTube channel that I have now is called Mud Fossil University, and that was a response to the academic community's total ignoring of everything that they would hold dear if they had found it themselves. It's all DNA tested, CAT scan, anatomist verified specimens that cannot be disputed or challenged. So they ignore and will not discuss, and Yale won't even allow me nobody will allow me to show.
Okay, so Roger, that brings us to number one of your items. And again, the show to be looking for is Roger Spurr, Giants in the Earth, The Incredible Possibility of Mud Fossils on theothersideofmidnight.com. And number one here, tell us about this YouTube video. It says DNA Ancient Humans.
All right, hold on. Let me just be sure I'm in the same spot with you.
It's the one you were telling me where you took it to Harvard.
Yeah, okay. Right. Well, here's what happened.
Yes.
I went to Yale, and well, I contacted them. They wouldn't let me come down there, but I contacted them and I told them what I had, and they said, "Oh, it's impossible. There's never been a fossil found in Connecticut." And I said, "Well, I got them coming out of my ears." And he said, "No, those aren't fossils. You don't know what you're talking about." I said, "Well, I think they are. Will you look at them?" He said, "No, we won't look at them." I said, "Well, why won't you look at them? Is that your job?" He said, "No, we don't have to look at anything we don't want to look at. We're not going to look at them." And I said, "Well, what would it for me to verify this?" "Oh, you'd have to have CAT scan. You'd have to have DNA. You'd have to have this." I said, "I'm going to do that." And they said, "Well, go ahead and do it." And I said, "Well, okay." So they told me. I said, "Well, where would I get? Who would I do it? Who would you take the word of?" And they said, "Well, we work with the University of Texas down in Austin, da 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 da, and they do their CAT scan." So I got a hold of them, and we got the CAT scan done, and they refused to even discuss it with me. They did cut off communications as soon as they did the CAT scan, and they refused to even acknowledge that I was ever even there. It was absolutely bizarre. And I attacked them viciously, University of Texas. And they actually ended up having lawyers call me and the police telling me to stop bothering.
Oh,
yeah, imagine that. And because they didn't want it, they refused after taking. I don't know. I got to be honest with you. I don't even know if they paid for the test, because it was some other researchers I was working with. The test was $1,500. They went down there and they delivered the head that we're having scanned. And they scanned it, and they just threw them out, and that was the last word. Now,
the head you're referring to, is that the one we have on the page?
Yeah, the human
head.
Okay,
so folks, that's number 11. You want to tell them about the head? But look, maybe tell some more about what you're talking about, and then we'll come to the head.
Yeah, so, well, and anyway, all these tests were done, and all of the information was in, and it was conclusive. I mean, it wasn't, there was no... You know, these were not like these cheap little tests of DNA tests. These were done with ancient protocols and all kinds of special. I don't know exactly how they do it, but they do all those colored little bar charts and things, and they figure out what the different CTAG things are, and they look for certain markers, and the markers they look for are. What's called mitochondrial DNA sequences. And there's two sequences that they specifically look for that tell exactly what kind of a creature it was by the mitochondrial DNA, which is the mother's DNA, which stays the same for everybody. Everybody has the same, this one particular little piece of DNA. If you're a modern human, it's gonna be the same for everybody. All right, mm-hmm. And then you have the nucleus. DNA, which determines your specific characteristics. That is another test, very expensive, and all I wanted to do was be sure these were what I was saying, they were humans.
So you saw the tests? I mean...
Yeah, oh yeah, I have the tests. I got all three tests done.
Oh, you got the tests, okay. But then they wouldn't talk to you after you did the tests.
Nobody would talk to me at all once that was done. As soon as we had the CAT scans done too. And the CAT scans, they would not talk to us about. And the DNA, nobody will respond to any of this. Mm-hmm. Harvard, Yale, Max Planck, or any of them. So here's what happens. So I just do a blitz of the whole world, literally. I send off this to everybody that I can think of that's in the academic arena that I have seen has had any work done whatsoever on ancient, creatures of any sort. Mm-hmm. And I sent to Max Planck and Harvard and Yale, which is that's the worst school I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, I got to be honest with that. I did absolute terrible. Anyway, so I sent it to everybody that I could think of, and I sent it to Harvard, and they're having this big study going on. It's called Origin of Man or something, the Origins. They won't speak to me. Nobody will speak to me.
Your ideas are too challenging.
Because they have no way to challenge. They have no way to challenge, and it throws them into a disarray like you wouldn't believe. And as a man, and I've had people tell me, they don't know what to do. And these are academics, real, honest, true academics that have been following my work. And as one guy told me, he said, we don't even know what to do now. So we don't know what to do, how we're going to handle this. And they don't, because they're so far wrong about everything in geology and about our past and about every single thing they've been teaching us is just absolute nonsense. And they're frauds because they won't address it like a stand-up person would. They run and they hide. Mm. And that's what's no. And I'm not going to let them get away with it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I got all this evidence and it's incontrovertible. Nobody can challenge it. And they run and hide. So I started at Mount Fossil University. And I'm going to challenge them. And after I sent all this stuff out, lo and behold, about 2 years later, Max Planck and Harvard come out with this big thing. Yeah, there's DNA in mud. We found DNA in mud. And we can find DNA in any mud that we want now. And they can pick up mud from anywhere, and there's DNA in it. And that's true. I know that. So that's correct. Because it comes out of the mud fossils. It is the erosion of body parts that they're digging through to find scraps of DNA. And their process now, they're giddy. They're literally giddy about it. I mean, I think, well, on that that thing that I sent you about the ancient humans.
Yeah, that's the number one there, DNA, yeah. Ancient humans. Mm-hmm.
It tells the whole story of how they're so thrilled now they can dig around in cave mud and they can find all of these different DNA sequences, and there'll be plants and animals and birds and everything will be in there, which obviously they're there because the animals shed their DNA. Then they're going to dig all this stuff in the cave and they're going to look for anything that looks like it might be a Cro-Magnon man, and then if they see that, yep, that's it. We proved that Cro-Magnon man lived here.
Hmm.
And they're working with mud and dirt that's rolling around on the floor that came in there from a flood or something. They have no idea about the things that they're doing. They're so far off, it's unbelievable. They don't take into account any floods. No floods whatsoever. They think that carbon carbon fixes when you die. Now listen to this. The whole idea of carbon-14 is that they can say, well, the guy died. That means the carbon doesn't move anymore, so he's just dead. And then after 2,000 years, we can go in and take that out, and that means that was the same carbon that was in his body 2,000 years ago. Well, that's nonsense, absolute nonsense, because carbon never, ever, 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 ever stops moving. Carboxylation is a process where carbon molecules continuously move, and that is why the rocks transition down and eventually become quartz crystals, silicon dioxide. Everything will evaporate. All the organic molecules in, they're called volatile organics. And that is what carbon is. It's a volatile organic compound. And it moves around with the transition metals. And that is why that heart became so specifically colored in all of those regions. It's like that didn't happen in 10 seconds or a day or a week or a month. That happened over the course of years, you know, many years, of these transition metals and molecules moving in and out of the rock, the dead rock. Not fixed. There's nothing's fixed there. Mm-hmm. Nothing is in any single rock on the face of this planet. When you die or anything dies, that carbon will never, ever, 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 ever stop cycling out. So the carbon you're reading in that rock could have come from anywhere. Plus, it's going to be soaked with who knows what. It came from who knows where.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Like a sponge absorbing.
Right. So carbon C14 testing is absolutely nonsense. It is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And to say that, oh, yeah, we tested it and we came up with this date. I'm going to tell you exactly how they do that. And I know this is a fact. They can say anything they want, but they're lying if they don't take this as a fact because it's true. All they do is they take a bunch of different little places on the thing, and then they check the carbon 14 there. And they will get, every single one will be different. They will not get one that's, they're not all going to be the same. No way in the world will that happen. Mm-hmm. What they'll do is say, which one here looks closest to what we were hoping to get? And if they have it, then they say, yep, there it is. And if they don't have it, they'll say it's inconclusive. That's how that works. Wow. It does not. Correct. It's just not, it's ever, 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 ever going to be reliable. So,
So can we come back to the head that you found, the one that was tested? It's number 11 on your page. One. Yeah. It looks like a normal size human head, or maybe even a little bit smaller.
Yeah. It's actually about normal. And that head was found in rural Kentucky. Clay County, somewhere, I believe, by a guy named Arlie Caudle. He's a, he's a country boy, and they found this head in the mud, in a bank of a mud. And Jim Burchill, who is he's a historian down there, down in Kentucky, and he did a lot of work with the ancient Indian carvings and so forth on rocks and things, and he protected those. And anyway, he became like the keeper of that head, and Scott Walter, who had a show called America Unearthed, he saw he was doing something about these ancient structures and showed this head on TV and said it was just a carved sandstone head. And when I saw it, I said, whoa, that is not carved. That's a mud fossil. And then I knew right there, I said, here we go. I am going to get this one. We're going to prove this is the human head, and we'll take it and get a CAT scan, do all that stuff, which we did. And it had the head was crushed in the forehead, and it has a knife wound straight through the top of the head, and it's wearing a knit cap. So you can actually say they took a playing card and stood up between his head and the cap.
And the knife wound, can you put something into, is there like a hole there? I mean, how do you recognize it's a knife?
You can see the actual pattern of the knife blade. It has like a diamond shaped pattern. You know how a knife blade looks like. Stuck straight down, and you can see it in the CAT scan. The CAT scan was very, very poorly done. It was done in Texas. Absolute terrible job.
So you saw the CAT scan?
Oh yeah. But it was terribly done. And now, so then now from then on, we use Jesse Garant, who Jesse Garant is the best CAT scan facility in the world. They are. It's called Jesse Garant and Associates. They're up in Michigan and in Canada, and they they scan industrial equipment, racing car engines, and all the stuff that. I mean, a real, I mean, this is serious stuff. They did 7 CAT scans for us and of all, a bunch of other stuff that we had. And they actually did it for free because and these are not cheap. These are, you know, these are thousands of dollars per scan. They're not, this is all 3D, you know, fabulous work. And Jesse realized what I was trying to accomplish, and then I paid for everything myself on all this, and I refused to take any money, and I will never take any money. So this is nothing about money for me whatsoever.
Now I noticed on this head that it's the forehead's kind of reddish.
Right, that's the colors of blood. There's you see the red and the black.
Yeah.
All right, the red is your ferrous oxide O3 blood, which is your blood. And the black, you see the black up there, up at the top of the head?
Right,
where it's creased in there, that is a fractured bone. It fractured the whole bone. It looked like it got hit with some kind of club or a round ball or something right in his forehead. And where you see the black up at the top, that's called bone black. And that is the exact same thing that happens when you fracture a bone in yourself. That's called black and blue. That's what it is.
Oh, okay, yeah.
All right, that's the bone. It's called bone black, and it's from the ferritins is the actual technical name of it, and they come out of the bone, interior of the bone, and it creates that blackness and it's bone black. Now the reddish stuff on his forehead there, that is the ferrous oxide O3 style where it's the red blood, and it turns red and rusty and looking like that. So that's the two different types of blood, the vein blood and the artery blood. So
from looking at this, or from studying it, what age, how old do you think this is? Or do you know?
There's really no way to tell. There's no way to tell any of that. The age. You just have to. There is no way to tell.
Okay, what's the least it could be? Like, could this be a modern man, or what's?
Well, it's definitely a modern human. What age? How long it would take to petrify into that condition? I would say
yes.
I would say you could probably become that. See, that's feldspar, and this was the one that I had to discover to try to prove what this head was. This is when I started to do the chemistry and created my own feldspar.
Mm-hmm.
Because I needed to prove, you know, I saw the head. I knew what it was. I could see the transition of the blood and the CAT scan and everything. And then I said to myself, how the hell did this thing turn into feldspar?
Feldspar. What's that word, feldspar?
No, feldspar. It's
feldspar.
It's a type of rock, feldspar. And
okay.
It's what it is it's skin, really. It's the skin and body tissue.
Roger, we need to hold it to the other side. We're coming at the break at the top of the hour. I want to let everyone know that we are on the other side of midnight.com, and our guest tonight is Roger Spahr with Giants in the Earth, The Incredible Possibilities of Mud Fossils. And I'm going to just talk here a little moment and let everyone know I'm filling in for Richard C. Hoagland, who sadly is a little bit ill tonight. So I'm filling in, and I'm really grateful to my tech partners over here, Chris Bell and Keith Morgan, who are helping me out. And it's going to be an unusual show. It already is an unusual show. I'm just like amazed at what's going on here, what I'm learning. Roger is totally mind-blowing my mind. So you're on the other side of midnight.com. Tune in to listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests. Support this broadcast and don't miss another groundbreaking conversation. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. Listen to past episodes anytime on any device. Search the archives of over 420 episodes. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Another way to support this one-of-a-kind show and our research is by donating to The Other Side of Midnight. And to do this, just click on the donate button at the top of the homepage on the nav bar. This is Talk Radio at the cutting edge of science and thought.
Thanks for listening to this exciting first hour. Now, the second and third hour of the show is available to Club 19.5 members only. Please support the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 and join our very interesting community. To do that, please visit the website, theothersideofmidnight.com, and click on the Join Club 19.5 link in the left-hand column. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll gain access to the rest of this show and all previous 350-plus shows that we have done. Now, recent Club 19.5 member archive recording have the commercials removed, and the sound quality has been enhanced. You'll also receive a dedicated private podcast feed that contains these enhanced show recordings. And you'll be able to download the MP3 files directly from the archive if you prefer. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll have access to a private chat server that members use to chat about the show during the show, and you will have a direct channel to post a question that will be read on the air to the guest. And you'll have a place to post questions during our open hailing frequencies. We realize that not everyone wants to call in live, and this gives you an easy way to participate in a live show without having to participate. Club 19.5 members can use this private chat to talk about the shows, ask questions, suggest new guests, and I may even pop on from time to time to answer specific questions. Also, the entire Bridge crew is in these participating chat channels, so you can interact with them as well. You'll also be the first to preview our new videos and reports. We'll be adding exclusive new features to Club 19.5 as we go forward, and boy, have we got some amazing things to tell you about in the coming weeks. So please support the show and don't miss all the exciting new things we have planned. I want to thank all our Club 19.5 members because without your guys' support, this show would not be on the air. Please help us continue growing the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 today. And when I say we really need you, we really need you. Over and out.